Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast. Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Press conference. Earlier Sunday afternoon, authorities were engaged in a standoff with a person in a white van who was possibly responsible for the mass shooting. They confirmed that that suspect died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. 10 people were killed in Monterey Park Saturday in the shooting near a Lunar New Year celebration at a dance studio. A senior Democrat says President Biden should not negotiate with Republicans on the debt ceiling.
If we delay this, if we have short-term extensions of the national debt, we run the very risk of a recession in this economy.
Appearing on CNN's State of the Union, Illinois Senator Dick Durbin urged people to be wary of the so-called GOP budget balancers when looking at the amount of debt accumulated during the Trump presidency. The U.S. reached its technical borrowing limit last week, but the Treasury says it'll be able to pay the government's bills through June. The Cincinnati Bengals are punching their ticket to the AFC Championship game. They notched a divisional playoff road victory over the Bills in Buffalo on Sunday, 27-10. Cincinnati now heads to Kansas City next Sunday to face the Chiefs for a spot in Super Bowl 57 in Arizona next month. It's a rematch of last year's AFC title game, which Cincinnati won. Buffalo's season came to an end as safety DeMar Hamlin attended today's game following his on-field cardiac arrest earlier this month. Over in the NFC, the Eagles are already into the title game after winning Saturday. Currently, the 49ers are hosting the Cowboys for the right to play Philadelphia next Sunday. And Mattress Mack is placing a huge bet on the Dallas Cowboys. The retail furniture store owner put down $2 million in cash at Caesars Sportsbook in Louisiana in favor of America's team. He'll pocket $3.35 million in addition to the $2 million he put down if Dallas wins. I'm Chris Caraggio, NBC News Radio.
My name is Daniel Rudbari. I'm an attorney. I represent tenants against landlords. So if your landlord is making you live in substandard living conditions, bug infestation, cockroaches, rodents, mold, mildew, broken windows, lack of security, flooding, call me. You have rights. You can reach me at 877-384-9911. Again, I'm attorney Daniel Rudbari, and I represent tenants against landlords that refuse to make repairs and force tenants to live in substandard living conditions. So if you think you're living in a substandard living condition, call me, 877-384-9911. The call is free. It's a toll-free number, 877-384-9911, and the advice is free.
Every Wednesday at 3 p.m., it's the Uncommon Sense Democrat with host Eric Bauman.
I love when his people talk about how old Joe Biden is. But he's just a couple years behind him.
You'll get the best political commentary and stuff like this.
Da, 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 da. Good night, Donald Trump. Well, it's time to go.
Join us for the Uncommon Sense Democrat every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on the stations that leave no listener behind, KCAA 1050 AM and 106.5 FM.
Absolute Contractors, Inc. is taking time to remind listeners that blood supply levels are critically low. Donate blood generously. You may save the life of a child, loved one, or even a first responder. Go to redcross.org to find a location near you or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to schedule your donation today. This reminder from Grant Halgen of Absolute Contractors, Inc., a full-service builder with a wide range of experience for residential and commercial, new construction, or remodel and more. Call 909-844-6383. That's 909-844-6383. Or visit AbsoluteContractorsInc.com. That's Absolute Contractors Inc. on the air because they care.
What does the WeatherBug app tell you?
My commute will be a doozy today.
Pack my allergy meds.
Lightning. Pick up a pizza, not a tennis racket.
With more free map layers than any other weather app, WeatherBug tells you more of what you need to know to prepare you for the unpredictable. Discover why over 10 million users choose WeatherBug.
Maybe it's a commute to the couch day.
Download the WeatherBug app today for free.
This segment is sponsored by PressPrint, Southern California's best full-service union printer and mailhouse. They offer the lowest prices around with unmatched service and reliability and free delivery throughout SoCal. PressPrint can print anything from letterhead, business cards, and campaign literature to mailers of any size, lawn signs, banners, door hangers, or just about anything you might want. PressPrint promises to save money for you, your business, or your campaign. If you'd like to learn more, contact Mike Kroombrin at PressPrint 714-399-8777. Get the union bug.
Open for takeout and delivery, El Tapioc Mexican Food Restaurant in the Tri-City Center of Redlands is back. Their entire family is on hand to serve up their delicious burritos, machaca, chorizo, huevos rancheros, steak and eggs, just part of their mouth-watering great food. Since 1531, people have marveled at the miracle of El Tapioc. And now you can marvel at the great food the Lugo family has been serving up for over two decades, nestled quietly in the corner of the Tri-City Center Shopping Mall next to Burlington Coat Factory. Support them. They can't wait to serve you some of their delectable, authentic, south-of-the-border Mexican fare at great prices, served up with love. Support the area's best-loved Mexican food restaurant in these tough times. Order up a tasty meal on the phone for delivery or takeout for breakfast, lunch, or dinner from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Call 909-307-0017. That's 909-307-0017. Or Google El Tapioc Redlands and treat yourself.
You're listening to an encore presentation of this program, KCAA, the Inland Talk Express.
Thank you for tuning in for this edition of Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali. I am Attorney Zulu Ali. With the Justice Watch crew, Rosa Nunez, Michael Bilal Clark, Dr. Akil Bashir, and Andrea Roderman. This week, like every week, we'll be discussing critical and legal and social justice issues that are impacting our community. This is actually our special Black History Month edition of Justice Watch. We have a very, very special guest with us today. It's Dr. Amiri Yassin El Hadid. He is actually the former chair and professor at Tennessee State University. He received his bachelor's degree at Alabama State University, and he received his PhD in sociology from the University of California. He's an author, he's a scholar, and he's personally somebody who's near and dear to me. He's actually my mentor, and I always said that I received my education as a student, and I continue to grow and learn from him today. And all of my other schooling was just a training to me, and he basically laced me spiritually and mentally. And as I said the last time, you're going to learn something today, for sure. So thank you for joining us again today, Dr. El Hadid. Is he on?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. So again, thank you for joining us.
Okay. Thank you, brother.
Yeah. And basically, we're going to focus today on the legacy of Malcolm X. Actually, our topic is the Black History Month and the legacy of Malcolm X. And You know, Malcolm is a very endearing and respected figure, and often his legacy is minimized to a specific speech or a slogan like "by any means necessary." And we know everybody claims Malcolm, but both politically and spiritually, from black nationalists to socialists. So I want to just jump right into it because I know we don't really have a whole lot of time. But I kind of want to see if you can kind of lay out the complexities of Malcolm as both a national and a global figure.
Oh, yes, sir. Okay. Assalamu alaikum to you and the listening audience. Peace and blessings of Almighty God. Allah be with each and every one of you.
Wa alaikum salam.
And I want to start with, at least in the first segment, talk about the last 2 years of his life. I think we know quite a bit already about his life prior to his exodus from the Nation of Islam, but we don't really have a good picture of where he was trying to go in his trajectory. So I'd like to share with the audience three quotes, one from the Quran and then one a hadith or a saying from the Prophet Muhammad, and then a quote from Brother Malcolm, and I think that would sort of set the table and the landscape for what I would like to contribute and say going forward. The Quran, it says, "A mosque whose foundation was laid from the first day on piety is more worthy of your standing forth for prayer therein. In it are men who love to be purified, and Allah loves those who make themselves pure." I'm establishing this as a baseline because, as you know, when he left the Nation of Islam, he did establish a mosque, the Muslim Mosque Incorporated. And he drew a clear line of demarcation between mainstream or Sunni Islam or universal Islam and the type of Islam that he participated in the Nation of Islam from outside of the prison from 1952 to 1963. But he had actually converted in prison. He converted as early as 1948. And then when he came out, he became the assistant minister, along with his brother, Wilford, who was the minister, Muhammad Mosque number one there in Detroit. So I want to, you know, start from that. And the reason I want to do that is because, I've, as you well know, I've read books and journal articles and watched documentaries about Malcolm X, or as I prefer to call him, Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz. And what you will find, without exception, is at least 95% of those sources, whether they're primary or secondary, tend to focus on his ideology as a Pan-Africanist, his ideology as a nationalist. And they don't really focus on his development, you know, from beginning to end as a Muslim. So I want to establish, you know, that baseline. The other quote is from Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He says, "The Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, said, none of you will have faith till he wishes for his Muslim brother what he likes for himself." And finally, from Hajj Malik himself, this is a statement he made after he left the Nation of Islam. "I am and always will be a Muslim. My religion is Islam. I do not pretend to be a divine man, but I do believe in divine guidance, divine power, and the fulfillment of divine prophecy. My sincerity are my credentials." And as you know, on March the 8th, 1964, after it was clear that he was not going to be let back into the Nation of Islam, let me share with the audience what happened. Hajj Malik gave a speech in New York on December the 1st, 1963. It was titled "God's Judgment of America." And because of the assassination of President Kennedy, he was told explicitly and clearly not to make any comments about the assassination of President Kennedy because, you know, a lot of African Americans love Kennedy, and plus the fact that, you know, the Nation of Islam was not in the good graces of the government, so they just didn't want to invite any kind of unnecessary drama. And not only did he tell Malcolm that, who was his national spokesperson, but he told every minister, every person in a leadership role, every person who had something to say in public, not to say anything about it. Well, of course, he wrote his speech to make sure that he didn't say anything. And then, of course, after that, a person from the New York Times asked him about it. And he just sort of, without thinking, he said, it's a case of the chickens coming home to roost. Now, he didn't necessarily mean to be disrespectful because the nation was in mourning, but he was just simply saying, when you look at what had happened, say, for example, after the March on Washington, August 28, 1963, when the members of the Civil Rights Movement went back to Birmingham, four little girls were blown up there. And then you had a number of incidents that happened. So he was just speaking to the fact that there was a climate of violence, you know, permeating the nation, and Kennedy became a victim of that climate of violence and hatred that existed. Of course, you know, Kennedy was a Roman Catholic, and that was one thing that the Protestants really didn't like. So some would even say, well, you know, that he was a Roman Catholic, so he had, you know, something to deal with from that standpoint. But anyway, he made the statement, and immediately he was suspended for 90 days from the Nation of Islam. And when it became apparent that he was not going to be allowed to return, he gave called a press conference, and on March the 8th, he declared his independence from his affiliation with the Nation of Islam and established the Muslim Mosque Incorporated. Now, the Muslim Mosque Incorporated was initially set up to, first of all, teach Sunni Islam. Some people might say, you know, Orthodox or mainstream Islam, which is quite different from the teachings of the Nation of Islam. The Nation of Islam has a very strong black nationalist flavor, and they have some beliefs that are not consistent with the universal beliefs of Islam, which are bearing witness, there's no God but Allah, Muhammad is last and final messenger, praying five times a day, regular charity, fasting during the month of Ramadan. And this year, Ramadan is going to start on the 4th.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Of April, and then, of course, making the pilgrimage to Mecca, which he did make. So he wanted to establish that type of Islam. Now, of course, from his 12 years of experience inside the Nation of Islam, he realized that the Nation of Islam did have the right program, but it didn't have the right, you know, theology. And he wanted to change the theology but maintain many of the programmatic things, such as, you know, economic self-reliance. And they had sort of a three-step program. And that three-step program was, you know, wake the people up to knowledge of self and kind, wake them up to their humanity. Secondly, clean them up in terms of their vices. And as you know, the Nation of Islam focused almost exclusively on the brothers and sisters that were at the bottom of the well. They call them the lost found members of the Nation of Islam. So you're talking about ex-convicts, drug addicts, prostitutes, working class people, the lumpen proletariat. That was their main target group. The civil rights movement, on the other hand, catered more to people who went to church, regardless of their class background. It could have been a peasant in Mississippi, lumpen proletariat in Birmingham working in steel mills, you know, even lumpen proletariat out in the street, you know, and coming, you know, to change their way of life. But they had this whole you know, middle-class worldview, and their strategy was one of integration, whereas the Nation of Islam's strategy was separation, but more specifically one of economic self-determination as opposed to being dependent on white supremacy and plantation capitalism. Okay, so once he left, then the next thing he had to do was to establish some legitimacy for the new mosque, because in the beginning, very few mainstream Muslims thought that the members of the Nation of Islam were legitimate Muslims. So then he went to the Islamic Center in there in New York. He attended the Jummah, and he actually took the Shahada at the hands of Dr. Mahmoud Shawabi and also El Hajj Jabbar. Right. Jabbar. We're getting ready.
Actually getting ready to go to a commercial break.
Okay, I'll stop here.
Okay, please do not touch that dial. We'll be back on the other side of the break with Justice Watch.
About to get back. Need some get back.
Do you have a great idea for a radio show but have no idea where to start? Or have you been hosting a podcast for a while and want to take it to the next level? If so, you need the Gab Radio Network. To host a show on the Gab Radio Network, all you need is your voice, and we'll handle the rest. From technical engineering to full-service audio production, and much more. Every show on the Gab Radio Network can be heard on our station on the TuneIn Radio app. Plus, we put all of our shows on our satellite, which is accessed by over 5,500 stations. And here's the best part. You can host from anywhere you want. There are many means to connect to the Gab Radio Network remotely, and our staff of highly trained engineers and producers will make you sound like you're right here in studio. So, if you want to be on the Gab Radio Network, the same network that hosts the Small Business Advocate, Radio MD, and The Federalist, send an email right now to sales@gabradionetwork.com. That's sales@gabradionetwork.com.
Nubian Pictures presents a CCM Films production documentary entitled Purpose and Freedom. Keep your hand on the plow. This emotional and strong documentary tells the story of African-American lawyer Zulu Ali, seeking justice and his purpose as a lawyer, while crossing paths with Araceli, an undocumented immigrant from Mexico who is seeking her freedom. Together, they help discover their purpose and freedom in each other. Watch this incredible film today from iTunes Movies, YouTube Movies, Amazon Prime, and Google Play Movies. Learn about the cast and crew, links to purchase, and more at purposeandfreedommovie.com. Purpose and Freedom. Keep your hand on the plow. Available now. Rated G.
I did not feel safe. That's why I decided to come to California, because I didn't feel safe in Mexico.
It's kind of like the system, and if you go outside the system, then it becomes a struggle.
Are you an immigrant seeking defense representation and are looking to protect your rights? Or maybe someone who is experiencing an injustice or discrimination and need a lawyer you can trust? Well, that's exactly why you need the help of award-winning trial lawyer Zulu Ali. The law offices of Zulu Ali provides immigration defense representation for those seeking justice and looking to protect their rights. If you or a loved one needs professional legal advice and representation, then contact Zulu Ali. Zulu Ali's firm focuses on criminal law, family law, civil and personal injury, and international law. Zulu Ali is a former police officer and U.S. Marine, so you know you're in good hands. Serving all of California and immigration cases nationwide, representing victims and suspects at the International Criminal Court at The Hague. Call Zulu Ali today at 888-682-3049 or visit ZuluAliLaw.com.
Welcome back to Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali, where we're having a very, very special guest, Dr. Amiri Yassin El Hadid, who's joining us. And I guess, Doc, you were kind of getting ready to get to your next point, so I was going to allow you to go ahead.
Inshallah. The next point I was about to make was that in order to legitimize his claim to being a proper Muslim, he took the Shahada, and he said the following words: I bear witness, I hereby declare that I am a true Muslim. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is the apostle of Allah and his last prophet. Now, he actually wrote that out. You know, you don't, when you take the Shahada, you don't have to write it out. But because he had written a letter to become a Muslim with the Nation of Islam, he had that idea that I need to write this down on a piece of paper and then sign my name. So Dr. Shawabi took that and they put a portfolio together in order for him to make the Hajj. As I said, Hisham Jabba was a witness, and Dr. Mahmoud Shawabi was also a witness. He was in charge of the Islamic Center there in New York, in Manhattan. And he was also connected with the Muslim World League. The Muslim World League is pretty much a dawah organization. They're concerned about propagating proper Islam across the world. They provide students with scholarships, et cetera. So he was working with that type of support. And in the Quran, as I said, the Hajj is the fifth pillar of Islam. And in the Quran it says, and proclaim the pilgrimage. Then let them complete the rites prescribed for them, perform their vows, and again circumambulate the ancient house. So it was by going to Hajj and seeing Muslims of all backgrounds. He saw a microcosm of the human family, all of whom were in a part of the Ummah of Prophet Muhammad, or the world community of Muslims. So that caused him to start rethinking some of his ideas. Now, it just wasn't an epiphany or something miraculous that happened when he made the Hajj. His mind had been trending in that direction as early as 1959, when he traveled abroad for the first time, bearing the name in his passport of Malik al-Shabazz. And his mission there was to set up an itinerary for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to make the Umrah, which is the lesser Hajj. And he set up the protocol, trips to Saudi Arabia, his trips to Pakistan and other areas. But Elijah Muhammad now was thinking about changing the nation of Islam to proper Islam. He had a son there at Azhar University, Dr. Akbar Muhammad, who got his doctor's degree from Edinburgh, and for many years he was professor of African history and Islamic studies at State University of New York in Binghamton, New York. I met him at Vanderbilt University back in the early 70s when he was director of the African American Studies program there. He was helping, you know, to build that program. But he left Vanderbilt in Nashville and then went to New York. And he had another son by the name of Wallerstein Muhammad, who was also very astute in terms of Arabic and Quran. And those two younger sons were going to be very instrumental in helping Honorable Elijah Muhammad to transition the Nation of Islam into mainstream or, you know, Sunni Islam. So I wanted to, you know, highlight that, but you asked me to talk about the second organization, right. And I want to get to the Organization of Afro-American Unity. Now, after he completed the Hajj, he made, if you will, a second pilgrimage throughout Africa. He traveled to 14 countries in Africa and spoke to at least 14 heads of state in those countries. I started sampling ideas from people like Gamal Abdel Nasser in Egypt, Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana, Sekou Touré in Guinea, and other, you know, leaders, Julius Nyerere in Tanzania, Jomo Kenyatta in Kenya, Kenneth Kaunda in Zambia. So he was getting a sort of a picture. Now, you have to understand that Hajj Malik was sort of brought up as a Gaviite. His parents were Gaviites. In other words, Hajj Malik's father, the Reverend Earl Little, was to Marcus Garvey what Hajj Malik was to Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So, and also his mother was the national correspondent secretary for the Universal Negro Improvement Association. So it was just a logical transition for him to come out of a Gaviite background and join, you know, the Nation of Islam. So having said that, let's talk about the organization he formed. So after he traveled through Africa, went to Ghana, met with people like the widow of W.E.B. Du Bois, both of the heads of state that I mentioned. So now he signed a need to form a second organization, and that is the Organization of Afro-American Unity, which was patterned and led in spirit of the Organization of African Unity on the African continent in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Now, in this scenario here, there were a lot of people who wanted to be a part of the new movement that he was developing, but they didn't want to take Shahada and be Muslims, because many of them have the image of Islam as a nation of Islam, and they didn't want that. You know, they were satisfied with Christianity, or they were satisfied with being socialist, or satisfied with being black national or pan-African, and they didn't want any parts of somebody else's religion as such. So he figured that in order to create a united front so he could link up the movement, the human rights movement that he was developing, with the civil rights movement, then he had to form another human rights organization, which was the Organization of Afro-American Unity. And some of the people there who were founders of A. Peter Bailey, Dr. John Henry Clark, Sidney Poitier, Harry Belafonte, Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis. So he was able to attract a lot of celebrities and intellectuals. Of course, he was operating, you know, there in Harlem, New York, and he's working those individuals, those people. So then, of course, once he formed that organization, then he started building it, and he decided he would make a second trip to Africa. This time, when he made the trip to Africa, the idea was to go there and be a part of an in-gathering of African heads of state in Cairo, Egypt, and also the in-gathering of leaders of the various liberation movements in various parts of Africa. Now, in 1964-65, you did have a significant number of African countries that were independent. This time, Kenya was independent, Egypt was independent, Ghana was independent. But you had countries like in the southern part of Africa that were still fighting liberation fights, like in South Africa, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Namibia, and countries like that. But a significant number of countries in West Africa have become independent, especially in Anglophone Africa and Francophone Africa. But there were still, you know, struggles for national liberation, you know, that were still going on. The idea here with the Organization of African American Unity as a human rights organization was to first of all form a united front within the United States based on human rights, elevate the civil rights movement to the level of human rights, and change the venue for protesting rather than taking the case to the United States Supreme Court as a civil rights issue. He wanted to take the issue to the World Court of the United Nations as a human rights issue. And then you, once you have human rights, you know, to understand human rights, you just the audience will go back and read, say, the Declaration of Independence. That's a human rights document. And one of the famous quotes in the Declaration of Independence is, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all human beings are created equal, endowed with their creative and certain unalienable rights, that among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." If you can grasp that, and also the idea of taxation without representation, those are, you know, human rights claims. Because at the time that the Declaration of Independence was penned, they were talking about trying to come from under the colonial control of, you know, of the British Empire. And Haji Malik also saw the plight of African Americans as an example of the.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
That's the colonialism. He was trying to translate our plight here in the United States in a language that was universal. So in other words, on the African continent and the Caribbeans and the South America, they were waging decolonization struggles. They were national struggles to decolonize their country from Portugal, from Spain, from England, and from France. So the same way he was telling us that we came out of chattel slavery in 1865, but we were not free. Right. Even though we had the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, we went from chattel slavery to domestic colonization. Right. So many of us went back to the same plantations we were on, picking and doing chattel slavery, and became sharecroppers. So that was the colonial situation.
All right, okay, we're getting ready to go to a break. Please do not touch that dial. We'll be back on the other side of the break with Dr. Amir Yassin El Hadid and Justice Watch.
Payback! Payback! That's it! Payback!
There's a new nationally syndicated radio program that's sweeping the nation, and you don't want to miss it. Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali, the voice of justice for the people. The focus of Justice Watch is to provide an honest analysis and viable solutions to the criminal and social justice crisis in America and the world from a black, brown, working class, and socially disadvantaged perspective, and to motivate listeners to be informed and part of the solution. Zulu Ali is joined by the Justice Crew, consisting of Rosa Nunez, Michael Clark, Dr. Akil Bashir, and Charito Ali to tackle the most pressing issues. Host Attorney Zulu Ali is a former police officer, U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and an award-winning trial lawyer who focuses on representing persons accused of crimes, immigrants, victims of discrimination, and persons seeking civil justice. Find out how to listen to Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali at justicewatchradio.com. Nubian Pictures presents a CCM Films production documentary entitled Purpose and Freedom. Keep Your Hand on the Plow. This emotional and strong documentary tells the story of African-American lawyer Zulu Ali seeking justice and his purpose as a lawyer while crossing paths with Araceli, an undocumented immigrant from Mexico who is seeking her freedom. Together, they help discover their purpose and freedom in each other. Watch this incredible film today from iTunes Movies, YouTube Movies, Amazon Prime, and Google Play Movies. Learn about the cast and crew, links to purchase, and more at purposeandfreedommovie.com. Purpose and Freedom. Keep your hand on the plow. Available now. Rated G.
I did not feel safe. That's why I decided to come to California, because I didn't feel safe in Mexico.
It's kind of like the system, and if you go outside the system, then it becomes a struggle.
Are you an immigrant seeking defense representation and are looking to protect your rights? Or maybe someone who is experiencing an injustice or discrimination and need a lawyer you can trust? Well, that's exactly why you need the help of award-winning trial lawyer Zulu Ali. The law offices of Zulu Ali provides immigration defense representation for those seeking justice and looking to protect their rights. If you or a loved one needs professional legal advice and representation, then contact Zulu Ali. Zulu Ali's firm focuses on criminal law, family law, civil and personal injury, and international law. Zulu Ali is a former police officer and U.S. Marine, so you know you're in good hands. Serving all of California and immigration cases nationwide, representing victims and suspects at the International Criminal Court at The Hague. Call Zulu Ali today at 888-682-3049 or visit ZuluAliLaw.com.
Welcome back to Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali and the Justice Watch crew and our very special guest, Dr. Mira Yassin El Hadid. And before we continue, I know we're somewhere around the bottom of the hour, but I do just want everybody who's listening, and actually, Doc, we got quite a few people that actually are chiming in. And when I say chiming in, actually listening to the conversation. Both on air and in social media. But I do want to remind everyone that we're listening to, you know, as far as I'm concerned, he's the foremost scholar on Malcolm X, El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. And just so I can remind everybody that, you know, Dr. El-Hadid is the founder and first chairperson of the African Studies Department at Tennessee State University. He is also the founder and CEO of the Great Debate Honor Society Incorporated, which I had the pleasure of being involved in, and the Great Debate Academy Incorporated. Again, he earned his PhD in sociology from the University of California at Santa Barbara and a BA in psychology and sociology from Alabama State University. He co-authored Between Cross and Crescent, Christian and Muslim Perspectives on Malcolm and Martin with Dr. Louis V. Baldwin, who is a professor at Vanderbilt, and Dr. El-Hadid also served as president and member of the editorial board of the Association of Social and Behavioral Scientists Incorporated. He is a member of the National Council for Black Studies Incorporated and the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations Incorporated. Dr. Hadid is a principal organizer of the annual Africana Muslim conferences during African American History Month in Nashville, Tennessee. So we got a heavy hitter. So, at any rate, And I'm sorry about that, Doc, but I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood, you know, your background. I know we touched on it at the very beginning, but I just want to reiterate, you know, your expertise and your background.
Okay. We got a thunderstorm going on here in Nashville. Can you hear that in the background? Or
I can't, Your Doc. I can't.
You don't hear it?
I don't hear it.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Okay, so anyway, right. So you can just go ahead and start, I guess, where you left off, because I know that, and just so that everybody gets an opportunity to understand that you will get an opportunity to ask Doc some questions, you know, after this next segment. But at any rate, I kind of want you, if you can, just continue where you left off.
Okay, well, I'll shorten this a bit so we'll get a chance to start questions in the third segment. But I want to quote another quote from Haji Malik. He says, "The Quran compels the Muslim world to take a stand on the side of those whose human rights are being violated, no matter what the religious persuasion of the victim is. Islam is a religion which concerns itself with the human rights of all mankind, despite race, color, or creed. It recognizes all, everyone, as part of one human family." And I want to keep on that baseline because I want the audience to understand that Haj Malik was first and foremost a Muslim. He was a Muslim to the bone, to the soul. And his Pan-Africanism was sort of secondary to that. What was driving his personality, his worldview, his core values, his core beliefs, his thinking, it was Islam, you know, the Quran and the Sunnah of Prophet Muhammad. So he sort of, after he left the Nation of Islam, because of the fact that he had attacked so many non-Muslims, especially those in the civil rights establishment, you know, they were a little jaded on him, and they were thinking, well, you know, we don't want to deal with him because, you know, he was really hard on us when he was Nation of Islam, but now he claims that he's an international universal Muslim. We're just going to have to take a wait-and-see attitude about it. And so, you know, he was trying to turn the corner and really present himself as a humanitarian rather than a zealot or somebody who was sort of like fanatical about one point of view. He became more open-minded. And one thing he said when he left the Nation of Islam, he said, in talking to a group of young people, he said, one of the first things that young people should learn to do is how to think for yourself. He said, once you form the habit of thinking, you know, if you don't have the habit of thinking for yourself, you'll be going west when you think you're going east, and you'll be going east when you think you're going west. So he was just sort of saying that he learned a hard lesson because he participated in a movement where he had blind faith in a charismatic leader. And he just never thought that charismatic leader was going to disappoint him. And as it turned out, that charismatic leader did disappoint him. So he was saying to young people, reserve your right for critical thinking and thinking for yourself. Now, when we go back to the Organization of Afro-American Unity, it was indeed a human rights organization, and they had formulated a petition to take to the United Nations and asking the United Nations to give African-Americans relief from the level of tyranny and violence that was taking place at that time. And for example, you know, when the people in the civil rights movement were marching in Birmingham, they turned the dogs on them, you know, and fire hoses. And not only was that going on, lynchings were going on. And all the people were trying to do was get basic civil rights. And they were also struggling to register to vote and exercise their right to vote. As we pointed out earlier, after slavery, we were given the 15th Amendment, which should have given us the right to vote. And then we're given the 13th Amendment, you know, the freedom. And then the 14th Amendment should have been our citizenship. But we're coming, as Martin Luther King said in the March on Washington, 100 years later, you know, after the Declaration of Independence, after the Civil War, in 63, 64, we still did not have the same human rights or civil rights that the average white American had, regardless of whether they were poor, rich, or working class or middle class. We wouldn't have those rights, you know. White Americans had white privilege, And they were the ones that benefited from those segregated areas of public accommodations, whether it was restaurants, colleges, schools, cemeteries, any areas of public accommodation, you know, transportation. They were a privileged group. Got on a bus, we had to go to the back of the bus. We had our own restroom. We had to drink from a colored water fountain. I can remember that growing up as a child down in apartheid Alabama, drinking from a water fountain that said colored, going into a restroom that said colored, getting on the bus and going to the back of the bus. I was maybe about 10 years old, man, but I was old enough to remember that kind of disrespect and that kind of indignity. And you just more or less had to swallow your pride because they tried to make you feel like you were invisible, that you were less than a human being. And we thought that 100 years later, the slavery was over. But the stigma and the vestiges of slavery just didn't disappear. So we went from chattel slavery to plantation capitalism.
Right.
Went from being a chattel slave to a wage slave.
Right.
Or a salary slave, if you will, if you worked, you know, in a job where you had a salary.
Right.
So I want to sort of stop here and give the audience a chance to maybe ask some questions, and hopefully we can get a dialogue going.
Thank you so much for this enlightening talk. We've been looking at the comments throughout the segment, and there's a lot of our viewers whom are interested. One of the questions that really stood out was from one of our viewers, Jamil Hassan, who's saying, you know, if we follow Mr. Malcolm, would we have to say loudly that Islam is the only religion to follow?
Say that again?
He asked, if we follow Mr. Malcolm, would we have to say loudly that Islam is the only religion to follow?
Let me repeat what I said earlier. Mm-hmm. The Quran compels the Muslim world to take a stand on the side of those whose human rights are being violated, no matter what the religious persuasion of the victims is. Islam is a religion which concerns itself with the human rights of all mankind, despite race, color, or creed. It recognizes all, everyone, as part of one human family. And as I was saying earlier, that was the reason that he had to form the second organization, because people wanted to work with him and join him, but they weren't prepared to become Muslim. So his first organization was Muslim Mosque Incorporated, and that was to teach proper Islam. It was a mosque, just like, you know, you have a church that teach Christianity. You have a mosque to teach Islam. So he wasn't the people that outside who were non-Muslim who didn't want to convert to Islam. Then he formed the second organization of Afro-American Unity, and you could join that organization, but it was primarily, you know, for African Americans. But any progressive person with a progressive ideology was welcome to join, you know, the organization of Afro-American Unity, and that has nothing. It was non-sectarian. It was not a sectarian organization. So I hope that clarified it.
Yeah, definitely. I also had another question. I feel like usually in our school systems, we are taught to remember Malcolm X as someone who was really ahead of his time. But would you say that perhaps he wasn't ahead of his time, but rather that he was the only one in the 20th century that could articulate the psychological power that white supremacists held over people of color? I mean, he clearly articulated what it meant to internalize racism and all of these things. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think that because of his Islamic religion, he was able to break outside of the mental slavery that European Christianity had imposed on our people. Mm-hmm. You know, when we came to America, during the colonial period and the antebellum period, as chattel slaves, as prisoners of war, you know, we didn't come over here as Christians. We came over here as Muslims and practicing the traditional African religion.
Could you hold that real quick, Doc? We're going to go to a break.
Back to it.
Okay.
Come back
All right.
To
thank
it.
You. Sorry. Please do not touch that down.
Got to get back. Need some get back.
There's a new nationally syndicated radio program that's sweeping the nation, and you don't want to miss it. Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali, the voice of justice for the people. The focus of Justice Watch is to provide an honest analysis and viable solutions to the criminal and social justice crisis in America and the world from a Black, Brown, working class, and socially disadvantaged perspective, and to motivate listeners to be informed and part of the solution. Zulu Ali is joined by the Justice Crew, consisting of Rosa Nunez, Michael Clark, Dr. Akil Bashir, and Charito Ali to tackle the most pressing issues. Host Attorney Zulu Ali is a former police officer, U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and an award-winning trial lawyer who focuses on representing persons accused of crimes, immigrants, victims of discrimination, and persons seeking civil justice. Find out how to listen to Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali at justicewatchradio.com. Nubian Pictures presents a CCM Films production documentary entitled Purpose and Freedom. Keep Your Hand on the Plow. This emotional and strong documentary tells the story of African-American lawyer Zulu Ali, seeking justice and his purpose as a lawyer, while crossing paths with Araceli, an undocumented immigrant from Mexico who is seeking her freedom. Together, they help discover their purpose and freedom in each other. Watch this incredible film today from iTunes Movies, YouTube Movies, Amazon Prime, and Google Play Movies. Learn about the cast and crew, links to purchase, and more at PurposeAndFreedomMovie.com. Purpose and Freedom. Keep your hand on the plow. Available now. Rated G.
I did not feel safe. That's why I decided to come to California, because I didn't feel safe in Mexico.
It's kind of like the system, and if you go outside the system, then it becomes a struggle.
Are you an immigrant seeking defense representation and are looking to protect your rights? Or maybe someone who is experiencing an injustice or discrimination and need a lawyer you can trust? Well, that's exactly why you need the help of award-winning trial lawyer Zulu Ali. The law offices of Zulu Ali provides immigration defense representation for those seeking justice and looking to protect their rights. If you or a loved one needs professional legal advice and representation, then contact Zulu Ali. Zulu Ali's firm focuses on criminal law, family law, civil and personal injury, and international law. Zulu Ali is a former police officer and U.S. Marine, so you know you're in good hands, serving all of California and immigration cases nationwide, representing victims and suspects at the International Criminal Court at The Hague. Call Zulu Ali today at 888-682-3049 or visit ZuluAliLaw.com.
Welcome back to Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali and the Justice Watch crew and our very, very special guest, Dr. Amira Yassin El-Hadid, in our discussion on the legacy of Malcolm X. And I think you were finishing your point on that question that Rosa just asked you, Doc. Did you want to start there?
Can you sort of frame it again for me? I want to make sure I did give an answer, but I just want to make sure that that was.
Yeah, I think you did, because I think the real answer that one was talking about, you know, as far as, you know, do you have to be a Muslim?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I think that you hit on the fact of his whole idea. And I don't want to take up too much time, Doc, because I'm telling you, you just don't know. We got a lot of questions. I mean, you really did. And honestly, since we've had this show, we've got more questions today than we've ever had. That's amazing. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, because I kind of want to, and that was kind of the interesting part is we all, you know, we know that Malcolm kind of is a figure that people kind of mold into what they want him to be at this point. And as we talk about whether he was a nationalist, and you hit on the fact that he was a Muslim to the core, and the fact that he organized a Muslim Mosque Incorporated, as well as the Organization of African American Unity, which was focusing on the fact that there were other individuals that he wanted to be involved with or get involved with that may not necessarily relate to, you know, the Islamic piece. And you know, what comes to mind when you talk about that is when Spike was doing the movie. And, you know, you had Malcolm that was sitting on, I could just see it now, he's sitting on the arm of his couch. Mm-hmm. And he's watching, you know, all the things that were going on, the brutality that was going on in the South.
Yeah.
And he also mentioned, even at that point, how he wanted to get involved with, you know, people in the South that were going through what they were going through, but because of the restraints that he had, because he had to fall within the alignment of his of the nation, that he wasn't necessarily able to do that. So I mean, and I think that that's something that people have to understand about Malcolm. Was that we always think that all of a sudden just a light came up in his head. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we also know that he was, you know, he was coming, even though it wasn't like he just went to the Hajj and just decided to become, you know, he knew what being a Muslim was like. We know that he had actually, didn't he go to Mecca earlier to prepare for Umrah for, if I'm not mistaken, was it Elijah Muhammad? Even before he actually even went to Hajj, is that correct?
Well, I've heard two versions of the story. One version said he didn't go because he didn't want to be the first one from the Nation of Islam to go to Mecca and upstage his leader. Now, I think he did go into Jeddah. You and I have both made the Hajj.
Right.
And that's not going into Mecca. Jeddah is where you stop and then people make sure your credentials are in order and then you can go and make the Hajj, you know, in terms of the sacred precincts, Mecca and Medina. So I think he went to Jeddah. He did not go into Mecca or Medina.
Yeah. All right. So
but the thing is, let me say this to the audience, that I know we have a limited amount of time, and I would encourage them to read our book, Between Cross and Crescent,
yes.
Muslim and Christian Perspectives of Malcolm and Martin. I co-authored this book with a Martin Luther King scholar, a brother by the name of Dr. Louis V. Baldwin. At the time, he was in the Divinity School at Vanderbilt, religious studies at Vanderbilt. Of course, I was on the faculty at Tennessee State University. And he and I are both from Alabama. And we decided, well, you know, let's try to see if we can write a book where we can resolve this tension between the followers of Martin Luther King and the followers of Hajj Malik. And that was the goal that we set for ourselves, to try to synthesize their thinking. And what we concluded is that they both converged because their lines were running parallel. This is not unique to them. I mean, those two schools of thought existed before they showed up. You know, with the tensions there between Du Bois and Booker T. Washington, or between Martin Delaney and Frederick Douglass. So all throughout our history, even going back to slavery, we had these two schools of thought. One group wanted to assimilate or integrate, which was the Martin Luther King school, and another group wanted to separate or repatriate, you know, back to Africa in terms of self-determination. So Martin and Malcolm sort of represented the highest development of those schools of thought that had been evolving as early as 1850. Even before that, I'd say even as far back as 1820s, because, you know, that school of thought in collaboration with American Colonization Society is what allowed us to establish the Republic of Liberia. But I think the point I was talking about before we stopped was the fact that Hajj Malik's mind was free of the fetters of religious slavery or psychological slavery. And Islam gave him the ability to free his mind of mental slavery. Because the point I was making before we went on the break was, when we came over here, none of us were Christians. And as a matter of fact, the plantation owners did not want us in Christianity because they figured that if we got into Christianity, we were not going to be limited to reading the New Testament. We were going to go into the Old Testament and identify with Moses and his struggle to bring the Hebrews out of Egypt. And they also put us in a situation where we couldn't, you know, read and write. If you can't read and write, that means your mind is not free, right? And so when we came over here, 25% of us practiced Islam. That is, those are from Central Africa and West Africa. The rest of them, the other 75%, were practitioners of different denominations of traditional African religion. You know, what we call voodoo in Haiti or voodoo in New Orleans, or we call it Candomblé in, you know, Brazil, or Santa Maria, you know, in Cuba. You know, traditional African religion where you have pour libation to ancestors. It's a kind of ritual that we go through during the days of Kwanzaa, where you're pouring libation, you know, for ancestors and so forth. So So that's those religions that we practice, and those religions were connected with our ancestors and our kinship system or our extended families. And when they brought us over here, they stripped us of our birthright and stripped us of our human rights, and then put us on the same level as livestock. You know, we were on the same level as a cow, a horse, or a chicken, chattel, meaning property.
Right.
So we had no civil rights and didn't have any human rights in it either, because we were what? Dehumanized.
Right.
So we didn't have human rights.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, some people take different routes out of this spiritual slavery that the, you know, the European Christians imposed on us. Some of us, you know, like James Cone, you know, nationalized Christianity. So you got Black Christian nationalism, or as Martin Luther King had it, the social gospel. And then, of course, like the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Marcus Garvey was into Christianity, but he was talking about the Shrine of the Black Madonna, and then a black Christ. And then those of us that went in the path of Islam, we left Christianity altogether.
Right.
And identify with Islam. Now, we have a spectrum in our community. Some brothers inject nationalism into Islam,
mm-hmm.
like Moorish Science and the Nation of Islam.
Right.
Others resist the temptation to do that, and they tend to be more mainstream or more Sunni.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have some that take it to another level. They could be like Salafi or Shia. But the vast majority of African American practitioners of what we might call Sunni Islam or mainstream Islam in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened after Honorable Elijah Muhammad died, and then Imam Waterfi Muhammad came in and then converted the followers of his father to mainstream Islam. The statistics, some estimate that he was able to bring into Islam as many as 20 million African Americans.
Wow.
Not 20, but 2 million.
Wow.
I wish we had 20 million Muslims.
No. Man, I do not believe.
We have about 10 or 15 million.
Yeah. Man, we're running out of time. I cannot believe that. Please, Doc, come back, because we've got like a slew of questions here that we wasn't able to get to. And like I said, I mean, on the social media site, we've got more people chiming in today than we've ever had, right?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Unbelievable, man. Yeah, we'll appreciate
I can come back.
Okay.
If you want me to come back next Sunday or another day?
Please. We can come back next Sunday if you want to.
Yeah,
okay, we can follow up.
Okay.
And let me apologize to you. We'll come back next Sunday. We'll just make 100% almost, you know, Q&A.
Okay.
I just give an opening statement in the first segment, and we'll do Q&A after.
Okay, bro. All right, thank you, man. Thank you, sir, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next week, same time, same place, same channel. Until that time, stay blessed.
You're on board KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.
NBC News Radio, I'm Chris Caraggio. Police say the suspect in Saturday's deadly mass shooting in Southern California is dead. Authorities say the 72-year-old suspect shot and killed himself inside a white van that was the subject of an armed standoff with police in Torrance on Sunday. This after 10 people were killed in Monterey Park as the gunman opened fire near a Lunar New Year celebration at a dance studio. A drive-by shooting in Shreveport, Louisiana, has left at least 6 people wounded, including 4 children. The shooting took place this afternoon in a residential neighborhood. Police Chief Wayne Smith says somebody drove down the street and opened fire on a house. The condition of the shooting victims is not yet known, and police have not yet released suspect information. One House Republican is calling President Biden a serial classified document hoarder.
What's amazing about all this is it takes us to the question of why were these documents here? Some of these go back to his Senate time.
Appearing on CBS's Face the Nation, Ohio Representative Mike Turner questioned if Biden showed the documents to
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.